But we are back. We're going to start the show off with a good song that I listened to for the last month, and we'll talk all about my last month after this.
Got me twisting things, stabilized with medicine. There's no depth to these feelings. Dig deep, can't hide from the corners of my mind. I'm terrified of what's inside. I get intrusive thoughts like cutting my hands off, like jumping in front of a bus, like how do I make the stop when it feels like my therapist hates me. Please don't let me go crazy. Put me in a field with daisies. Might not work, but I'll take a maybe. Been breaking daily, but only me can save me. So I'm capitulating, crying like a silly baby. I don't wanna be sabada. I don't wanna be sicada. I don't have a da 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 da. I'm running low on serotonin. Chemical imbalance got me twisting things. Stabilized with medicine. Somebody I love, like, does it ever really stop? When there's control, I lose it. Incredibly impulsive, so scared I'm gonna end up doing something stupid. But I try to contain it. Oh, it gets so draining. It's like my heart is failing. Every night I'm contemplating. My inner voice is saying tough, so I try to brush it off. Yeah, I try to brush it off.
That was Serotonin by Girl in Red. What is up, my listeners? I've missed you all so much during the past month, and that's exactly what we're going to talk about while we're here. I'd like to start our show off, though, by first introducing my co-hosts. We've got the Titan Phoebes, and we can't forget about our co-host here, Lawrence.
What up, what up?
Lovely Lawrence.
Lawless.
Lawless, yeah, that's what it was. I'm going to change it to lovely.
Can be lovely and lawless.
Yes, lovely, lawless Lawrence. So, we're going to start off with the usual segment, Lips Thought of the Week, which is Relapse. Many of you guys have probably been wondering why we've just been running reruns for the past 28 days or so, and it's because I am a struggling to recover addict, and like millions of addicts before me, I suffered a relapse and had to go into a program. So that's pretty much the topic of the day, but first I'm going to try and let all of our listeners who are not addicted get a chance to relate. Just imagine that when you were 16 years old, somebody told you the secret and made you believe it, that if you ran as fast as you could into a brick wall over and over again, eventually you'll just pass through it. So, even though all of your family and loved ones see you doing this and hurting yourself, but just can't get you to stop, you keep doing it. Eventually, 10 years goes by and somebody shows up and they're like, hey man, I used to believe the same thing and it's a lie. Come with me. Let me show you how the world really works. So you turn and you begin to walk away and you start to recover from all of the broken bones and all of the damage you've done to yourself. And as you're walking away, you overhear a conversation from a group of people who are talking about the secret that you believed for the last 10 years. And you take that to mean that it's a sign that this time it's going to be different. So you turn around and run faster and run into the wall even harder than you've ever done before. And when you brush yourself off and get up, the person who was there to catch you the first time was like, see, I told you it was a lie. And they turn and walk away together. And that is pretty much addiction recovery and relapse to the layman. So let's talk a little bit. Ooh, what's up, Lawrence?
What's going on? I can definitely relate to that. I ran into the brick wall for 10 years until somebody offered their hand to me and showed me a better way.
Phoebes, how are you doing over there today, man?
I'm good. I'm so glad to have you back in the studio. Appreciate hearing where you're at. And yeah, I mean, I don't think what you're saying is unique even to addiction. I think everybody has some brick wall stories in their lives. And I think a lot of times our ego gets wrapped up in being willing to acknowledge where something we believed is leading us into a brick wall. And letting that ego go sometimes is what's going to save us.
It takes a lot to let that ego go. That's why I had to go to this program that I went to. And I just want to talk about that for a little while. I attended a 28-day program called the Recovery Resource Center of Orange County, which is a newer 28-day program in Orange County, obviously. But the program was amazing. The staff there really made me feel like they cared about me and they were treating me as if my recovery wasn't just important to me, as if it was important to them. And I think that's really a really good thing to have in a program like that. And not to mention the residential aspect of it. It was a old Holiday Inn, so it was very comfortable while I was staying there.
Welcome back. We're glad to have you back, and I'm glad you made that choice to save your own life. And a lot of people never make it to that point where they even have that choice anymore. So you're lucky to be here, be alive today, and live to tell the tale. Share your message of hope.
It's hard to reach out for help for a lot of people. I was lucky that I didn't really struggle with that. It was pretty easy for me to see what was happening and get help immediately. And for everybody who falls into that same pattern and ends up in a relapse and stuck, I just want you to know that that doesn't mean that you failed at recovery. It just means that you're human. So just get up and dust yourself off and ask for help.
One of the things I had, was reading about around relapse, and I think we talked about this in the last show, was how there's kind of a lot of times warning signs that a relapse might be emerging before there's a physical using of drugs. Like a lot of times you can start to see somebody's in that spiral a week or 2 weeks before they even touch a drug again. And I'm curious, Lip, for yourself, like how that manifested, like what you started to see that made you recognize this is a moment I need to slow down, I need to ask for help, I need to not push through and pretend everything's okay.
Well, firstly, I realized that I wasn't talking to my family, and I started to cut my friends off again. I wasn't fulfilling my obligations, and I immediately, once I got going, I immediately lost all control. And the only thing I could think to do once I felt exactly that spiraling down feeling was to ask for help. But that's not everybody's first instinct. So isolation was definitely a big indicator for me, and I think it is for a lot of other people as well. And feeling hopeless, like there's no chance for you, or you might as well be doing this anyway, because what else are you going to do with your life, you know?
Yeah, I think a part of the thing that helped you too is that you were connected to the right people that you trusted and you could be honest with and reach out for help.
That was a huge part of it. That's why I stress so much on building a support network, so you have those people, you have those connections, because once you find the right people, like you know that you are safe with them, you can trust them and be completely honest. And that's exactly what I had and exactly what I did.
It raises a question for me about on the other side of it, if you're a family member or a friend of a person, I think no one wants to be the person who pushes, who says you need to get yourself checked into treatment, and then that person gets mad or stops talking to you, but you also don't want to not name when something's hard. So I'm curious, for you, what's the balance that you need from people in your life between holding you accountable and naming when things seem hard, but also letting you stay having agency about what you need to do for your own life?
Well, I think for family members, if you see something, say something. That's a big thing. But don't push too hard. Because exactly what you said could end up happening, Phoebs. You could just end up alienating the person, and then they'll just stop talking to you. My family, they might not have even really known, because like I said, I pushed them away purposely so I could do what I was doing. But I think that for anybody who has a family member who is in recovery, if you see anything like abnormal isolation, or they seem more depressed, or they're just not talking to you as much, try to engage them and see if anything's wrong. It's usually pretty easy to tell when somebody has gotten to that point, you know?
Yeah, and I know this is where, you know, the clinical side of things, there's like a skill set called motivational interviewing that a lot of treatment providers get trained in. And it's basically the art of knowing how to ask questions that guide a person themselves versus telling people what they should do or think. And it should lead to the same sort of outcome, but it's a very different communication approach, which honestly works for anything, right? Who would rather have somebody tell you what's wrong with you versus asking you some compelling questions to help you figure it out yourself, right? I think we all want the latter, no matter what we're dealing with in life. And so that's something too, I think, you know, being willing to ask questions that help a person kind of come to their own conclusions versus telling them what conclusions maybe you think they need to come to, I think that's important.
That is absolutely important. I'm also a big advocate for Narconon, which is it's a support group for family members who have addicted loved ones. And I think that more people should do that, because recovery is not a one person thing. That's why our motto is recover together, right? So
right.
There are resources out there for people who have family members who are addicts in recovery or addicts in active addiction. And I think they need to be utilized more. And if you do use them, like, you're a million times more likely to be able to notice when your loved one needs help. And they might not be asking you for it vocally, but they're showing you that they really do need help.
Yeah, I think it's hard with family members because once, like, they know what's going on. As much as we think that nobody knows what's going on, they know. And I think once we cross the point and saying, this is what's going on with me, there's accountability after that. So if I tell you I'm struggling with my addiction, you're going to call me on it when it's appropriate, like, or say, like, how is this situation going? Is it getting any better or not? And for some people that, you know, telling somebody may jeopardize their housing or their relationships with other people, so there's a hesitancy.
Exactly. That's why I created Helping Hands Recovery, our online organization. Actually, it's only on Facebook right now, but that's a safe outlet for people who are afraid of asking for help. They can talk to me directly. My phone number's on the Facebook page, and there's more than one way of getting help, and I'm willing to help anyone who asks me for it. Or if you just want to talk, if you feel like you're in a dark place, my phone number, again, is advertised on my Facebook, so on the organization's Facebook. But we're going to take a break now and listen to a song, and then after that, we're going to talk about everything that I gained through going into treatment and coming out of my relapse. We'll be back.
See you.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Recover Together. You got your host, Lip, here. Now with Lawless Lawrence as my second mic, and not to forget the Titan Phoebes. So, So Lawrence, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your experience with recovery and relapse and with your training as a certified recovery peer advocate, what it was like for you.
Hey, what's up? Again, congratulations for coming back, and I know you went through a lot, and thank you for sharing your message about relapse and what you went through. And I've been through my own situations as well. My first rehab I went to, I pretty much decided one day that I wasn't like those other people there, that I had a family, I had a job, I had things that I had to go back and take care of. And they, all the counselors told me that I would go home and I would use, and I swore up and down that I never would. And, you know, within a couple hours of getting home, you know, I was like scraping my old spoons and bags and, you know, digging through whatever I could find. And it was like at that moment that I realized, like, maybe I didn't know what was best for me, or, right, or, you know, what my pattern looks like. And it was only until other people started talking to me and explaining things that I could see things in a different light.
Yeah. So when exactly did you decide that you wanted to go ahead and be a recovery coach and try to help other people?
I think it was about 2011. There was a lot of work going on in the recovery advocacy movement, and you know, we went down to Washington. They had a huge concert in the park. Yeah, I think Phoebes even went to that. And you know, some money became available for trainings, and I was working a lot with young people in the community and for different organizations. And they said, "Hey, do a bunch of you guys want to take this training? Like, you could use your lived experience to find a job and, you know, help people that are still out there." Essentially the same work you're doing now, you know, except, you know, you get rewarded by getting paid and having the best job ever.
Yeah, that's great. I love that you just said that, rewarded by having the best job ever. We need people like you in the recovery network, in our recovery networks. We need people who care, people who struggle with mental health disorders, or people who struggle with addiction, or people who are just getting out of prison and feel like there's no hope for them. We need people like you. We really do. We need organizations like the Catskill Clubhouse as an outlet to be able to do the things that I'm able to do right now. I've been out of prison for only 5 months, and I have a regular podcast. I have a great support network that's more of a family than people who work for me. It's just, We need people who really care, and it sounds like you do. Phoebes, I wanted to see if you could at least relate to what it would be like to have a relapse, although you're not an addict, just in your life.
Yeah, I mean, so sometimes I have a hard time holding that label. But then again, I'm like, wait, are you in denial? Because I've been trying to cut back on smoking both tobacco and marijuana in my own life for different reasons. And actually, like, went through the process of, like, getting a coach to help with nicotine cessation. Like, got myself some patches, like, did the things. And, you know, I hate bringing it up because I know for so many people in recovery, like, tobacco is something that's really important to keep them on track. So, like, all drugs are different to all different people. But the way it was showing up in my life was not supportive, right? Which is ultimately what defines if something's a problem or not. And so, and I was, like, feeling really strong about it. And it's one of those things where it's, like, I can't quit marijuana unless I quit tobacco. Like, I've got this problematic mixing thing going on. So, like, basically I could totally relate, because I was going really strong at, like, a week where I hadn't, like, everything was just the patches, hadn't smoked anything, and then like went and was in a different space, different setting, came back and like completely fell off the boat, like utterly fell off the boat, and like back even to like worse than I was. Like it's not like you just go back to like, oh, you were like cutting down. It was like back to the full fledged worst possible, you know. It's taken over my whole day. It's all I can think about, and this is it for like days on end. So I'm like crawling out of that hole right now. So I can relate in some to some degree, and like, and it's kind of amazing to me how quickly the like, for you know, screw it sort of attitude kicks in and overrides all the other sort of programmed thoughts or practices, right? This is why cognitive therapy is common, yep. Right? Like to retrain those thought patterns. Like all the things I tried to practice, it just like went out the window, and I was completely overrun by, I'm stressed, I'm tired, whatever, it's fine, you know? And it is fine, right? That's the thing. Like there is no shame in the relapse, right? It's part of the cycle. Yep. And, you know, it's just now I'm at this point of being like, what I have to do, which is hard for me, and I'm sure there's other folks who can relate to this, is it's like when I was in a solid place in recovery, then it felt like I was running kind of full guns and able to do a bunch of stuff. And then I recognized as I was losing track of that, I had to stop running full force on the things that were working and go back to the basics, like basics, right? Like wake up and do some self-care, like wake up and make sure I have Nick patches available and put it on, you know what I mean? Like wake up and like, you know, remind myself of the three things I do different than when I would have dropped in and had a smoke instead. Right. Like, and it's frustrating, right? Cause it takes time to do self-care. It takes time to practice new habits. And like, I'm the kind of person who wants to be like, go, 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 work, 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 let nobody down. And pretend I don't have any other issues to deal with, right? That I can just like jump to being a fully able-bodied, no problem person in the world. So I had to kind of go through that whole cycle, and now I'm back at the point where like I took my time this morning. You know what I mean? Yeah. I like slowed down, took my time, valued my own well-being enough to do that, because I finally hit that point where I was like, nothing else is gonna work until you do this.
Period. Well, I'm happy. I'm happy that you have been able to crawl out of that nicotine hole. Nicotine is one of the few drugs that once you stop, your tolerance never ever diminishes. So even if you're like, okay, I'm just gonna have one cigarette, you start smoking again, your brain instantly starts craving nicotine just as if you never stopped. It's definitely a problem. I just went 28 days with wearing a patch every single day. And as soon as I got out of the program, I went and bought a pack of cigarettes. And
you hit that brick wall.
I ran right into the brick wall. I ran right into the brick wall and started smacking my head off of it.
Yeah. I think we have to go easy on ourselves sometimes, though, you know, and not, like, talk down to ourselves and say, oh, you know, I'm a piece of trash because I failed today. Yeah. It's like recognizing the small successes, you know, for, like, mental health issues. Like, okay, I didn't get everything done that I wanted to do today, but I made the bed and I did my laundry, you know, and that's all I could do for the day.
I got a poem that I wrote while I was in the program. It's called Recovery, and it relates kind of to exactly what we're talking about. To recover is to regain, to replace, to retrain. What once was ours will be again if you commit to change like I know you can. Chemicals trained our brains to be slaves to their own circuitry. Releasing mass dopamine tricked you and made you believe. To survive, you now need to feed the beast of our disease. I feel like that is a very like accurate and powerful description of exactly what recovery is. And the reason why I say it with a question mark is because when you relapse, you feel like, are you really in recovery? But if you get back up and you get back, like do what I did and get right into a pro, yeah, you're in recovery. Relapse happens sometimes. I'm not saying if you're in recovery, yeah, go ahead and relapse. But I'm saying it happens. It's a part of recovery. And it happens in other aspects of life with mental health. Like, I relapse with my mental health sometimes. I stop taking my medication and I go back to being the crazy me, which is by no means saying that being crazy is bad. Everybody's pretty much crazy. I don't even know really what normal means anymore. But, like, it happens. This is a relatable part of life to everyone. And there's so much that you can gain through fighting through it and starting over. And, like, just the experience and the knowledge that you gain through the whole battle. It's just, it's, recovery is worth it. And don't let relapse stop you from getting everything you can get. And again, like I said, I've gained so much just by admitting that I needed help and going into this program. So we're going to play a song by Bobby Sessions called Higher Self. And when we get back, the Titan Phoebes is going to paint the bigger picture. We'll be back.
Yeah, Bobby Sessions, young legend. Hey, hold up. A celebration of your higher self. Look inside, you can find your wealth. Yeah. Hey, find a chair, pull a seat up, direction to find yourself. The answer in your being, you need to go find some help. Lose the timidness, limit this infinite pot of wealth. Be aware, celebration, embracing your higher self. Covered in my dirt, it won't go away with a rinse. I confess, my depression can eat away at a fence. My anxiety would tie me down, I can't find the strength. Confidence to hit a vent, say my name is on the list. Not convinced, I admit in a pit, I gotta live. Speak the truth, I don't walk in the room. Anonymous or ominous, cut the problems, hit target without a miss. Demon begging me to answer my phone, I called it quits. From the days of a pager, the name ain't Stankovic. To a day we float in space, pouring drink on a rocket ship. Living proof, miracle with a bread and a pile of fish. When I doubted from a mountain, a voice has shouted this. Not a manger, Dallas native, earth shaking when I was born. Footsteps, none to follow, my shoes was never worn. Was a prince, I converted to king, my highest form. White dust flying through purple rain in a quiet storm. When I talk, going off, the world can sound alarm. Let me stunt for my name, hall of fame, where I belong. Tapping in to the soul of a child, now that I'm grown. Not influenced by these students of thoughts, I'm on my own. Get this project, the kids in the projects. Ball like Ben Simmons, but gotta trust the process. Story got an everlasting arc without a climax. Movie way too big to fit the screen inside the IMAX. Walking to the beat on my own drum and it's a hi-hat. Vacation down to earth, complete my work, uplift the conscience. Money come and go, but you can never get the time back. Celebrate your stay before the day you gotta fly back. Legend.
As I contemplate the impermanent nature of reality, I release attachment, recognizing that it is the source of all suffering. I develop emptiness so that I may experience union with the universal consciousness and merge with the oneness of all creation. I am love, I am light, I am free.
Welcome back to Recover Together. Before I introduce the Titan, I'm going to read another quick poem. It's very, very short. It's called Stop. Stop. Stop and think before judging me. I've watched atrocities and lived with terrible dreams. Stop. and try to relate. Maybe there was a meaning behind me getting high. Maybe I simply couldn't cope with the trauma of being alive. And with that, I'd like to introduce the Titan, Phoebes, who's going to paint the bigger picture.
Hey, thanks for that poem. Yeah. And I'm just letting that song vibe on me. That was a gift for you. We're not crazy, right?
I love like, that song.
There is no normal, like, either we're all crazy or none of us are. You know, the great myth of normal is, it's that. It's a myth.
There's no normal person.
I think it's a spectrum. I think everybody's on it, just different degrees.
Exactly, right? And there's no one, this idea that there's, like, one model of the, it's funny, I just heard a radio segment about this recently that, you know, there's somebody on who's like, when we think of what the, quote, normal, non-sick, non-afflicted person is, right? A, they don't totally exist. Right? It's an average of ideas. And to the extent they do exist, they're really, really, really boring people. Like, there's not many, and they're very boring.
Like the red eyes for dry eyes guy.
Red eyes for dry eyes. Striving for what we should strive for is a world that takes care of everybody and one another.
Yes.
And I think relapse in the bigger picture, painting that is requires us to do that. Requires us to get into the specifics that each person is carrying to really understand, because you can't, there's no universal truths in this work. Like, relapse is bad. That's not a universal truth, right?
Absolutely.
Use at all, right? It's not a universal truth. You know, Lip asked me to look up some statistics on relapse today. And what that journey really helped me realize is that, again, it's very specific. Like, the national average is that about 40 to 60% of people with a substance use disorder will relapse within, you know, a year of trying to, you know, going into the recovery process of a conscious recovery process. But 40 to 60%, that's pretty vague, right? And it's kind of actually like the rates of relapse with prison and like incarceration, the rates at which people go back to prison. It's like, oh, it's about 40%, but we all know well that there are people for whom which that risk is more like 80% and people whose risk is 5%. When it comes to relapse with substance use, the drugs themselves make a huge difference, right? Because drugs all have different sort of effects on the brain circuitry that are gonna affect the likelihood of relapse. You know, like Lip talking about the fact that your tobacco tolerance never goes down, right? These are different chemical effects that are going to have an impact on relapse. So when you look at, you know, heroin, for example, that number goes up to 80% versus 40-60%. Same with methamphetamines, 88%. Alcohol is 90%. It's not the highest. Cocaine's much lower. It's 23%. Weed tends to be about 70%, right? So there's those different breakdowns that we need to be thinking about with, for yourself or for somebody you're trying to support, like, do your research, know what kind of chemical, what is the specifics of the chemical dependence that a person's struggling with, because that's going to give you different information about what relapse could look like or the likelihood of it happening. The other huge factor that I feel like we've been touching on during this is whether or not you have a co-occurring mental health disorder. Because then you're actually juggling two potential relapses at the same time that affect one another. Your mental health relapsing in terms of managing depression, managing anxiety, managing PTSD, managing schizophrenia, whatever it might be that you have to deal with on the mental health side, then you're also juggling that substance use disorder. And a lot of times if your mental health starts to slip, you're going to go back into self-medicating, right? And then that becomes the substance use disorder slip. So estimates are as high as like 80% of people who, when they say they have a substance use disorder, are also grappling with a co-occurring mental health disorder that can also relapse, right? So there's another layer of complexity to whether or not you might expect that to happen. Then layer on top of that, all the differences, right? These are all spectrums, you know, using Lawrence's language of what's the social environment that a person's going back into? Like, what are the likelihood that their stress triggers are going to be activated or not? And I know a big stressor for you, Lip, was like the social environment, who you were around, what your housing situation was, right? Like, I know that impacted part of your journey,
absolutely,
right? Separate of, so the social environment's a huge factor that we need to account for as well and take responsibility for as society, that we think about if we're actually setting people up to succeed or saying you got to go back into a really, really difficult, dangerous, stressful situation, but you should be able to handle your
but
brain.
You'll be fine.
No
you'll
problem.
Be fine.
Yeah.
you got exactly. This.
Got it, right? Because that when we
just lock yourself in the room, don't ever talk to anybody, and you'll be fine.
Exactly, right? When we put all the responsibility on the individual, we're setting them up to fail, right? And I know that at the end of the day, each of us has to be responsible for our own actions, but my ability to take actions that are good for me are absolutely going to be impacted by what's happening around me. Like, I think we got to balance those two things. And of course, around social environment, one of the factors of your social environment is how are you perceived moving through your social environment. And this is where your identity in the world starts to matter too, right? There's a theory out there called minority stress theory that's meant to explain why there's higher rates of substance abuse and relapse in racial minority groups or in gender minority groups or in sexual identity minority groups, right? That you have this added level of stress that you have to carry moving through the world that then becomes more likely to trigger substance use or a mental health relapse or both of those things at the same time. And so that's where we start to see, especially in the LGBTQ community, these statistics are very different, right? You can't use these national averages because basically all the numbers that you would read for the general population, just go ahead and double them if you're talking about the LGBTQ community. That's about what the statistics show.
Yeah.
You're twice as likely to start at a younger age, to have like early experimentation, to not ask for help, to use multiple substances simultaneously, to relapse, and to have those co-occurring mental health disorders.
And it's all during just a struggle to feel accepted.
Exactly. And that's what drives it, right? Because when we talk about those risk factors of relapse, what was the first thing you said was isolation was one of your first warning signs, right? So imagine you're moving through the world where you're already kind of isolated because people are judging you for being transgender or judging you for being gay, right? Then you're already sort of in a headspace of isolation. And I think the other thing that we as a society need to think about is how are our treatment centers set up to deal with that? Because
exactly.
A lot of LGBTQ people will not go to any old treatment center or should not go to any other old treatment center if you don't have state staff who are trained in how to be respectful and empathetic and understanding of LGBTQ issues, if you're not dealing with bullying.
Exactly. In those facilities. People need to feel safe. Like,
and I'm curious, you know, about your stay and what aspects of treatment make it more safe for people or where you still think there's a lot of room that we need to grow for treatment centers to actually really be accessible to all people, not just straight, white, hetero people, right?
Exactly.
But how do we make it? So I don't know what your thoughts are on that, having just come out of a space.
The place that I was just at actually it was gender separated, guys on the bottom floor and girls on the top. So even as great of a program as it is, it doesn't really have a place to cater to people who are transgender or who are gay. Like, for instance, there was an individual there who was gay, and he was placed in a room with a straight person, and he was incredibly uncomfortable being in there. And there was just all they could do was make it so he didn't have a roommate, so he had to stay by himself. But doing that, I mean, I guess that was a way that could have made him feel, you know, like he was being picked on or something. You know what I mean? It's just like, I want to increase our demographic to the LGBTQ community because they deserve to be respected too, just like a recovering addict does. Like, I want everybody to feel safe, to be able to get the treatment that they need, and I absolutely think that our bureaucratic treatment centers need to, for one, have staff trained in being respectable and knowledgeable to all types of people. And there's room for improvement everywhere, Phoebe. That's what I'm trying to say. Everywhere. We are a society that needs to learn how to deal with everything better than we have been doing.
Yeah, and like how sad that happens in so many spaces. Like, the answer to keep the LGBTQ community safe is to put them into further isolation. You know, that happens in prison. That's happening, you're saying, in treatment centers. And that's really hard. And I think, yeah, we do need treatment centers that are dedicated or specialized with working with that population. But more, it's like, can we just integrate that into all these different facilities?
We can. We absolutely can. It's just, are we going to?
And, you know, the other thing, yeah, and so I think, so before, you know, you, if you know of somebody who's in, you know, a minority group that has been historically persecuted or discriminated against, and you know that they're struggling, I think it's really important to not just say, well, why don't you just go get help, but to take that next step to understand and appreciate how seeking help can actually cause more harm if you're not paying attention to what that help is designed around, right?
Absolutely.
And so, you know, there's lots of questions. If you're going to call a treatment center, you know, for a transgender youth, like, ask questions of that treatment center specifically. What are your practices for making a safe space for this person? If they don't know the answers, then call the next place.
Exactly.
Because you're going to do more harm potentially trying to force somebody into a space that's not designed for them than just leaving
and
it alone.
That's exactly my dream goal. That's my actual five-year, the end of my five-year plan, opening an all-inclusive 28-day program, the first one in my county. And probably when you say it like that, an all-inclusive 28-day program, the first one in the world. But we're going to play a song, but I'm going to keep talking so I can skip this ad because I didn't have it set up ahead of time. And there we go. And now we're going to play a song by AJR. And when we come back for the last few minutes, we're going to talk about everything I've gained through asking for help, going to the program, and sticking it out. We'll be right back. This is Recover Together, and that was Phoebs the Titan. Painting the bigger picture.
I should move, 'cause New York is getting muddy out. There's LA, but it's always kinda sunny out. And I don't wanna hurt. So I set my bar real low. I'm A-okay. You say it, but you just don't mean it. You're so insane. Shut up and just enjoy this feeling. Don't you love it, don't you love it? No, I ain't happy yet, but I'm way less sad. Don't you love it, don't you love it? No, I ain't happy yet, but I'm way less sad. Living sucks, but it's sucking just a little now. And I don't wanna try no more, so I set my bar real low. I'm A-okay. You say it, but you just don't mean it. You're so insane. Shut up and just enjoy this feeling. Don't you love it, don't you love it? No, I ain't.
asleep, then I'm losing my mind. Cause it's 3:30 and my brain's on fire. I've been counting sheep, but the sheep all died. And I'm trying too hard, but I can't not try. Well, I can't fall asleep and I'm losing my mind. Cause it's 3:30 and my brain's on fire. I've been counting sheep, but the sheep all died. And I'm not dead yet, so I guess I'll be alright. Don't you love it, no, I ain't happy yet, but I'm way less sad. Don't you love it, don't you love it, no, I ain't happy yet, but I'm way less sad. I may be wrong, I may be wrong, I may be wrong, I may be wrong. It's stupid, but it's all I have. Don't you love it, don't you love it, no, I ain't happy yet, but I'm way less sad.
Welcome back. We have a few more minutes left, and I'm just going to talk about everything that I've gained. First, I want to start with the knowledge, the wisdom I've gained. I learned a lot of new stuff while I was in the program, stuff about CBT that I didn't know. And for those of you that don't know what that is, that's cognitive behavioral therapy, which is focusing on changing the way you think. And then by changing the way you think, you change the way you act. And it's a behavioral modification type of therapy. And I mean, it's a pretty big thing in the recovery community now. And I also gained a lot of new friends because I met a lot of people in these program that I never would have met otherwise. So that's definitely an awesome thing. I've gained a larger network. I've gained a reliable recovery center that I can recommend people to. I've gained independence. I no longer am living in a hotel. I have an apartment that I can actually call a home for the first time since I was 19 years old. I'm 27 now, and I'm finally independent. And I gained a new respect for people who dust themselves off after they've fallen down. There's really, I could go on forever. And this is such, I'm so passionate about this whole community, the recovery community, mental health, LGBTQ. I love all of you guys, and I want nobody to feel alone. And if anybody thinks I can help, please feel free to get a hold of me. My name's Phil Schmidt. I'm on Facebook. You can add me. You can get a hold of Phoebes if you know Phoebes. You can get a hold of Lawrence if you know Lawrence. And they will all be glad to give you my number. If anybody needs help, I don't care like what you're struggling with. If you just want someone to talk to, I just want you all to know you're not alone. Nobody's alone. And we can do this if we do it together. That's why we recover together. Phoebes, I wanted to thank you for painting the bigger picture. And Lawrence, I want to thank you for becoming our new co-host and being here today.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Phoebes, you got anything you wanted to add before we end the show?
Just that the show is a testament that recovery is a journey. And having, needing to re-engage in treatment, needing to take a minute, doesn't stop your journey. Like, Lip, you haven't lost this because you decided to stop and take a moment and give yourself 28 days and get back on track. You didn't lose anything in making that choice. Exactly. And I want people to hear that you don't have to lose everything you've built in your recovery because you slow down and take a minute to re-engage in treatment, to take another round of treatment, to join another group, to take a couple weeks off of a project you care about. That's how you can sustain this long term. And it won't all disappear on you. And if you don't stop and slow down and ask for help, it's more likely that it will.
It's actually almost definite that it will.
Yeah, I think it's important to say no matter what they tell you, there's no start line and there's no finish line for recovery. You know, it's the journey.
If you relapse, just get back up and just you're going to be strong. If what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, you know, that's just the way it is. Sometimes you fall down, and every time you got to get back up. And from now on, if you need me, I'll be there to catch you. With that, I just want to let you all know we're way more likely to recover together. I mean, to recover forever when we recover together. And I'm going to end the show with one more song by AJR, because this is exactly what we need to do when we get back up from recovery, from relapse.
Used to keep it cool, used to be a fool, all about the bouncing master. Watch it on the news, what you gonna do? I could hit refresh and forget. Used to keep it cool. I keep it light, stay out of the fight. No one's gonna listen to me. If I write a song preaching what is wrong, will they let me sing on TV? Should I keep it light? Is that right? The show, gawking at the tricks of your sleeve. Too good to be truthful. I'm in a room full of entertainers and thieves. Used to let it go.
Guys, I would just want to let you all know that I will be back next Thursday, same time, same place. That was Recover Together. I'm Lip, and I can't wait to see you all again.